Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, good morning. Welcome to this edition of Healthy Matters. If you have any kind of a general health question, it's an open line show today. We'll be talking, of course, about COVID-19 for sure. But any other health questions, keep those in mind and give us a call or send us a text. Same number, 651-989-9226. Good morning to you, Dr. Hilden. How was your week? Give us an update, please.
Good morning, Denny, and good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good weekend. It's nice and toasty this weekend outside, at least up here in the upper Midwest. It's been a good week at the hospital. We're sort of in, as I had mentioned on, I think it was last week, or perhaps the week before, we've sort of entered a plateau, if you will, of COVID, or maybe even better than a plateau. We're on a slight improvement week after week over where we've been. So as we hear about all of the news nationwide about what's going on in other states and in Texas and Mississippi and especially in Arizona, you know, I think at least Minnesota can be, and Wisconsin, for those of you listening in Wisconsin, same with you, can feel relatively good, at least about where we are right now, that things are at a relatively calm place. I know our hospital still has many COVID patients, but not even nearly as many as we had just a month ago or 6 weeks ago. So I'm cautiously optimistic. So that's a good way to start a week, I guess, being a little bit
optimistic. Very good. Well, that is good news. Again, if you have any kind of a general health question, this is your day today. It's an open line show, as we said. So call in or send a text to Dr. Hilden, 651-989-9226. And it's kind of hard to believe, at least for me, that next Saturday is July 4th already. And I'm looking at the forecast, and I'm thinking you and I have talked about this many times over the years, that with 90, 92 degrees, and that's forecast pretty much the rest of the week today, that can be an issue for a lot of folks.
It really can. Boy, I didn't know it was going to be in the 90s all week. Well, I knew it was going to be warm. Yeah, and so I think my wife was telling me that. She goes, get ready for a hot week. It's going to be really hot and muggy. You know, that's kind of the thing about what we're seeing in healthcare facilities right about now is we're seeing some of our more typical summertime conditions in addition to the virus. So our emergency department is actually very busy with things that happen in the summer. There's heat-related illness, and people have to be really careful about that. We shouldn't forget about that. And then there's accidents and things. You know, just there's more people out and about. People are more active. They're breaking bones, and unfortunately, there's car accidents and just boating accidents. So there's a lot going. There's a lot of reasons that you might have to see the doctor this week. One of the things about the 4th of July that we do like to remind people, and this year it seems to be just incredibly high numbers, is fireworks. I don't know yes. why it is, but many people are reporting that, and many meaning me, way more fireworks going off. These are just amateur folks, you know, blowing off little fireworks they get, but there seems to be a lot of them this year, and I know the 4th is on a weekend. This year, so there's going to be more people lighting off fireworks, and with relatively little else people are able to do in terms of social, socializing. Fireworks are one thing people do, whether or not they're legal or not, they can do them from their front yard. And so we want to remind people to be as safe as you possibly can. Fireworks are not safe, regardless of what people think, they're not. And so they can burns are the number one thing, but there are other things can happen. You can lose fingers when you go to like pick up a firework that maybe didn't go off after you lit it, and then you go and then it goes off in your hand. So there's a lot of possibility for danger around fireworks. So people, please use as much safety as you can. Don't ever go pick up a firework that didn't go off. It could explode right in your hand. So we do like to remind people of things like that when the fourth comes around. And then there's just the heat-related injuries. Stay hydrated, stay in the shade, stay in cool places. If you must be outside in 90-degree heat for long periods of time, take breaks and make sure you stay well hydrated. That's so important.
Very good. 651-989-9226. That'll get you a phone call to Dr. Hilden and a text message as well, if you prefer that method. In fact, let's go to the phones. Dr. Patty, I believe, is first up calling from Minneapolis. Patty, you're on with Dr. Hilden.
Yes, I have a question about diabetes. I've been under a lot of stress lately. I mean, who hasn't? But on top of that, I've had family issues, and we live in one of the neighborhoods that was ravaged. And, ever since then, my blood sugar's been dropping, you know, way down overnight to like 40. And my doctor has said that she thinks stress might be a part of it. She's, you know, messed with my diet a little bit and that, and I'm just wondering if you have anything to say about stress and diabetes.
Patty, that's a really good question and an important one. And I don't know that I'm going to have a satisfactory answer to you, because the science behind that is I don't want to say it's lacking, but we're not exactly sure. There's some things that we do know. Your metabolism, the way your body processes nutrients and stores nutrients, that is upset in diabetes. That's the one thing. And then the second thing about stress is that your metabolism gets changed during that as well. One kind of example of that is that, you know, people who are anxious or nervous, let's say, just under stress, many, many people get gastrointestinal problems. So, you know, with that, your stomach gets tied in knots when you're anxious. And so, well, if your intestinal tract can be so tied with your anxiety and stress level, it goes to reason that your body's metabolism in general is connected to the state of your mental health. So the exact connection between extreme stress or just increased life stressors like you are experiencing, the exact connection between that and your blood sugars isn't well established, at least to me. It might be to some more experts than myself. But I think it's at least plausible, Patty. I think it is the way your body is processing everything has changed a little bit when you're under heightened stress. So what I might suggest is just if your blood sugars are dropping low, and you're on insulin, then you maybe need an adjustment, at least temporarily, of your insulin. If you're not on insulin, then you can probably just keep your medications where they are and just modulate your diet. Look at your diet. Make sure that you're getting enough to eat, maybe in smaller meals, smaller snacks throughout the day as opposed to larger meals, and do what you and your doctor are doing, and that is to adjust your diet to try to match your blood sugars. For listeners who don't have diabetes, blood sugars down in the 40s are too low, as Patty I'm sure knows. But when your blood sugars are getting down into the 40s, that is something I would want to address. So I would check your blood sugars more often during times of stress, and make sure you're getting enough nutrients to keep your blood sugars up. And then perhaps you might need to tweak your medication. Whether or not you can just mitigate all this by finding ways to relax, I don't know, but I think that's always a good idea for all of us during this time, especially you were in the neighborhoods that got hit really hard, so your life has been upended a bit. So that's probably an unsatisfactory answer, like I said at the beginning, because I'm not exactly sure of all those connections, but I think you're on to something, Patty. I do, and best wishes to you as you try to find a way to kind of come to a new normal. Thanks for your
very
call.
Good, Dr. We need to take a break, a quick one, alerting our listeners on the phone. Stay there. We're going to get your questions answered and text messages, too. That's all straight ahead here on Healthy Matters and News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters. If you have a general health question, it's an open line show today. So we'll talk not only about COVID-19, but whatever you want to talk about with Dr. Hilden. 651-989-9226. We have callers, Dr. Hilden, and we have texters as well. So let's get back to it. I believe Mike is calling in from Grand Portage with a question. Mike, thanks for waiting. What is your question for the doctor?
Hello, doctor. And you kind of answered my my question the previous caller, but can type 2 diabetes be reversed? If not, can it be managed and how?
Hey, Mike. Hi, Mike. Thanks for your question. The type 2 diabetes is the kind that most people have, for listeners who might not be aware of the kind of the basics. It's the one that 90-95% of people with diabetes have, what's called type 2. Back in the day, it used to be called adult onset, but that is not accurate anymore. So we call it type 2. What it means is that your body makes insulin, but it doesn't process that insulin correctly. And so so that means the blood sugars in your body rise and fall up and down, and your body doesn't process your nutrients correctly. Can it be reversed? Well, you cannot be cured. There's no cure for diabetes, but it can be managed. And there are so many good ways to manage diabetes today that it is better than it has ever been. There's been so many advances in the last 10 years on diabetes. It might be one of the diseases that we treat frequently for which there are so many new medications that it's bewildering even to us in as doctors. You know, some medication, some diseases, there's one new drug every 10 years or there's one new treatment every 10 years. Diabetes, there are just so many new treatments in the last decade. So if you have diabetes, you should be seeing somebody who knows, who's knowledgeable about that. That can be your primary doctor. Often you might want to also see an endocrinologist, but you can find a regimen of diet and exercise and medications, whether it be insulin or pills or other non-insulin injections. Some combination of all those can be found that will manage your diabetes to keep it under control. So can it be reversed? I would say it can be managed. It can't be cured. But the message on diabetes right now, Mike, is that it's very positive. It's very optimistic. Uncontrolled diabetes is severe. It leads to complications in your life, particularly heart disease, kidney disease, nerve disease, eye problems. It leads to a lot of problems way, way down the road. So managing it now is really important. So go see your doctor, and I'm sure they can find a way to help you out.
All right, very good. 651-989-9226 is the number for your phone call or text messages for Dr. Hilden. Speaking of text messages, here's one. It says, what is cellulitis?
Cellulitis is an infection and an inflammation of your skin and soft tissue. It's what we call a skin and soft tissue infection, and it's one of the more common reasons people get admitted to the hospital, surprisingly. Your skin is actually a huge organ of your body, and it has a number of functions. One of those functions is to keep nasty invaders out of your body, infections. But if you have, because there's bacteria just living on your skin. All of us, no matter how clean and hygienic you are, you have bacteria. There is strep and staph living all over your skin in addition to other bacteria. Well, your skin does a darn good job of keeping them out. But if there's a break in your skin, let's say you cut yourself on your leg or you have a sore on your foot, those bacteria can get inside. It's sort of been a breach in your fortress of your skin, and they can set up shop in there, and they can cause an infection. It looks like a red area around your skin. It sometimes expands up and down your skin into a larger area, and it can often be treated either with oral antibiotics, in other words, pills, or sometimes in the hospital, if it gets bad, it requires intravenous antibiotics. That's why when you cut yourself, we ask you to wash it out with soap and water because we want to clean out those bacteria so they don't get worse. People that are especially susceptible to cellulitis are people that have diabetes, like our last callers. We've been talking about diabetes. They tend to have more susceptibility to skin infections, but anybody can get one. So that's kind of a cellulitis 101, Denny.
All right, very good. Let's go back to the phones before we take a break. I think Bob is calling in from Hutchinson. Bob, go ahead. You're on CCO. Good morning.
Yeah, Doc. It's really been nice listening to you guys on the radio for the last couple of years. I've got a question with the COVID thing. Why have some of the deaths that I've heard of come back as COVID when they're not even related to car accidents and heart attacks?
Bob, could you say that one more time? Why have the diagnoses been COVID when it's a heart attack?
On the death certificates, come back as COVID.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it shouldn't be. How death certificates are done in, and I would assume most other states, death certificates are, we fill out what is the primary cause of death, and then what led to that death, and then what other things did they have at the time of death that didn't lead to it. So if somebody unfortunately has a severe car accident or a trauma of some kind, and that is how they died, but they are tested for COVID because everybody now is tested in the hospitals for COVID, their cause of death would have been listed as some kind of trauma, or if it was a heart attack, and then other conditions present would have been COVID-19, but not the cause. In Minnesota, the way those are done, and so that wouldn't have been listed as the cause, but it'll be listed as on the death certificate. Now, there are some where it's presumed, but Minnesota also reports those separately. So the ones that are listed as a COVID death are when it was largely established that it was COVID that caused their death. So in Minnesota, they're quite reliable. We have a separate reporting system in Minnesota that says presumed. And so that maybe they weren't tested. Maybe they died of a respiratory illness with a fever. Since influenza isn't really around in June, that would be a presumed case. So we have those three things. The cause of death, it was present, but we're not sure, so it was presumed. Or it was present and it had nothing to do with the death. In that case, it would just be listed. It's a good question, Bob, about how we track, because it's important that we have accurate data. It really is. If we're just writing COVID for everything, that's not right, because that would overestimate the burden of disease. But if we don't put it on there at all, then we're not accurately tracking the prevalence in the population. So I think we're doing a reasonably decent job in Minnesota on that. Other states report things differently, but at least my colleagues that I know at other academic health institutions around the country, they're doing it pretty much how we are in Minnesota. So I think the inaccuracies are relatively low, but I also agree with you that it can make for some confusion on causes of death. It's a good question, Bob, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bob. We're going to take a break, Doctor. We have another half hour of the show to go. Again, to remind our listeners, it's an open line show. We're not talking about any particular topic, so if you'd like to join in, either by phone or by text, here's the number, 651-989-9226. And we'll have a look at that hot forecast coming up in just moments here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters. It is an open line show today. If you have any kind of a general health question for Dr. David Hilden, call it in or text it in. The same number applies for either, 651-989-9226. Well, Dr. Hilden, we do have callers. We have texters, so let's get to them before we run out of time. Greg, I believe, is first up here, calling from Bloomington. Greg, thanks for waiting. What is your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I guess it's quickly becoming a diabetes show this morning. I was diagnosed at the beginning of June. I know you guys say, with questions and so on, please call your doctor. And I know we have this COVID-19 thing going on, but let me tell you from my experiences at the clinic I'm going to right now, you can't call your doctor. You can't even get appointments. I have a CT scan scheduled for 10 a.m. I saw my doctor last Monday at 3 o'clock. He said he'd schedule a CT scan. Somebody would call me. Well, I called to set up my appointment Friday at 9 a.m. because nobody had even called me back. I've had multiple issues with people calling just to set up appointments, and it takes days just for someone to call me to get an appointment. And then also just the whole diabetes thing. I'm a single man that's not much of a chef, and from what I see from the education books they sent me, I'm really worried about what I'm going to eat. Any help you could give me, I would really appreciate.
Greg, you are not alone, and so you are speaking for. First, I'll talk about your scheduling issues. You are speaking for many. When you say so, that's probably not much reassurance, but you are indeed speaking for many, because what you are describing is sort of sadly, the state of healthcare right now, where healthcare systems pretty much kind of shut down for the month of March, all of our clinic visits. And most of us were frantically trying to find ways, and mostly successfully, but finding ways to have people see us by phone and video. And then we're starting to open up our clinics, just like the rest of our communities are opening up their businesses. And what has happened is that it's been sort of there's a backlog of patients who can't get in. And then we have people who are staffing had to change during the slower months. So I totally hear you about the frustration. So you're right to be frustrated about that. I don't have a good solution for you, I'm sorry to say, other than to keep trying, call the places and see what you can do. As for diabetes, it is a marathon, not a sprint. And so over time, I think it'll get better for you, and that it find a doctor who's you're comfortable with, that's near you. See an endocrinologist if you and your doctor think you need to. Often people with diabetes don't have to immediately go to an endocrinologist. Your primary doctor can do that. And some of the visits over the next year or two could be by phone or video, and some of them could be in person. I would encourage you to do some in person, but they don't maybe all have to be. You do have to get blood tests and the like, so that's obviously got to be in person. So I think I'm hopeful that you can get through this summer without too much frustration, Greg, because that sounds like a real deal. As for your nutrition and the like, that is maybe as important as anything with diabetes, is looking at your lifestyle and what is your diet like, what is your exercise like, because many people can help their diabetes control by diet and exercise and make a significant improvement, maybe even holding off when you have to start taking medications for some time or eliminating the need to take medications. So I would, if you can get either a phone or an in-person visit with a nutritionist, that's the first thing I'd recommend. Most clinics have one available, because you don't have to be a four-star Michelin chef to do it. There are simple meals you can do that involve healthy food choices that don't require lots of effort to do it. We generally say eat smaller meals more frequently rather than big, huge meals. We tell people with diabetes don't eat as many simple sugars. And by that, I don't just mean sugar on a white sugar. I mean simple sugar are what we mean. We mean carbohydrates, things like white pasta, white bread, white potatoes, white rice. Those are simple sugars, and your body doesn't like those as much. Eat more complex carbohydrates like vegetables, whole grains, things like that. So you can get some of that advice from a nutritionist, but those are some places to start. Small meals, small snacking with complex vegetables and carbohydrates and lean proteins. That's where I would start. And best wishes to you trying to navigate the system, Greg. I feel for you on that one. You are not alone. I wish I could give you a short answer for how to fix that, but you're experiencing what a lot of us are right now, so I'm sorry about that. And stay safe in the next week. Drink lots of fluids. Absolutely. It's going to be hot outside.
Let's grab a text, Matt. This is a two-part text, Doctor. It's first question is, when do you think the seasonal flu vaccine might become available? And the second part, is there a possibility that the vaccine may offer protection against COVID-19? I know you've had that question before.
Yes, Danny. The first one of it is when will the flu vaccine be out? Probably in September or certainly by October. That's when we usually get it. And, you know, we harp on it every year. Make sure you get your flu shot. This year, we're not playing around. This year, everybody, get your flu shot as soon as you can. When your clinic has it, or your local pharmacy has it, or your local church flu shot drive has it, get your flu shot. Do it whenever it comes out. In September would be great, or October. Don't wait till January. Because COVID is a different virus. And if you got COVID and you got the flu, that's not good. We don't want you to get either one of them. But if you get them both, that's really not good. The second half of that text is, will the flu shot protect you against COVID? And that's an unequivocal no, it will not. The flu is a different virus. It's caused by, they're both viruses, but they're different. They both just happen to infect your lungs, but they do so slightly differently. COVID is at least in most people who get very ill, older adults, people with immune compromised systems, it's a very severe infection. But so get your flu shot, and no, it won't protect you against COVID, but get it anyway. It's really important to get it. You just don't want to get both of those infections this year. The COVID vaccine, some optimistic medical people think it's going to be ready early 2021. I'm slightly less so. We haven't had a vaccine developed in less than 5 years in the past. They take 5 to 10 years to develop a new vaccine. So to get one in 1 to 2 years would be record-breaking, but I think that the scientists can do it. I'm hopeful we'll have a COVID vaccine in 2021, but it will not be ready by this fall.
All right. Let's go back to the phones, Doctor. I think Shelley is calling in from Elk River this morning. Thank you for waiting, Shelley. What's your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I know someone who was diagnosed with COVID-19 back in April. She was in the hospital a while and tested negative twice and was able to go back to her home. And now she's testing positive again with symptoms. Can this become chronic?
Shelley, that's an awesome question, and I wish I had a better knowledge on that, because we're learning about new patterns with this thing. And the reason the test was negative, it could be that it just got missed. Aren't perfect. Tests are not perfect, and so it could have just got missed on the negative ones, and she's been positive this whole time. It is also true that some people, you asked, does it become chronic? Some people don't seem to clear it. And most of us, our antibodies get developed, and we clear the virus, and it goes away. And so a subsequent test will be negative after you had an infection. Most of us, that might happen at 2 or 3 weeks. And that's why we often test people in the hospital 2 weeks after their positive test to just kind of verify, did it turn negative now? But some people, it doesn't seem to. And we're not exactly sure why those folks, it's staying positive. I have a colleague who works out at the University of Minnesota system, and he said in his clinic, occasionally he'll have patients that are ill for a month or two or three, and they have this low-level kind of malaise and illness, and they just don't feel well. And they seem to have a more indolent or longer-lasting low-level infection with COVID, and we're not sure why that is. The vast majority of people will get better, and they will turn negative. So for the person you know who became positive again, I would believe that. I would trust that she's probably got it again or never really cleared it the first time, and that she might be one of these people that has a longer course, even if I'm not exactly sure why that might be. She should stay quarantined from people and stay away from people and just assume she's still positive. It's a good question, Shelley. Okay. We're going to have to learn a lot more about that in the coming years.
651-989-9226 is our phone number and text number as well. Let's grab this text and then we'll take a quick break. Texter says they have heart failure. And the question is this person more at risk with getting the coronavirus?
Heart failure is one of those illnesses that makes you more susceptible to more serious illness with the coronavirus. We're not exactly sure if it makes you more susceptible to getting it in the first place, but if you do get it, it's likely to be more serious. That's clearly the case with people like with diabetes. Diabetes, it doesn't make you more likely to get the infection in the first place. But it does, as Dr. Lefebvre said last week on this show, but it does make you more susceptible to having a more serious version. Probably the same can be said with heart and lung disease as well. You might be more susceptible to getting it. We're not sure about that, but you're definitely more susceptible to having a serious version of it if you do get it. So people with heart disease, people with lung disease, diabetes, you for sure need to be social distancing, wearing your masks. It's very important for you.
All right. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. It's an open line show on Healthy Matters this morning. Right now in the Twin Cities, as we head to near 90 for a daytime high, it's already 70 here from News Talk 830 WCCO. Hi, good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters and Open Line Show this morning with Dr. David Hilden. Doctor, we do have callers, we have texters, and I know we have limited time left in the show. But Susan, I believe, in Albertville has been waiting on the phone for you. Susan, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Yes, I was just diagnosed with myelodysplasia. I wasn't given much information on it, and I would like to know, is there any place you can find what myelodysplasia actually is?
Yeah, good question, Susan. Myelodysplasia is, myelo is the blood, the white blood cells in your body. They're made in your bone marrow, and dysplasia is that they're not right. How's that for a medical answer? I mean, dysplasia means they're misshapen and misformed, and they're not functioning the way they ought to. So in other words, the short answer, it's a blood disorder. It was probably picked up on a blood test. And my suggestion is, if you haven't yet done this, see a hematologist, because they can give you – there's a lot of different types, and they can give you more specifics about what yours means. Now, your white blood cells have a lot of important functions in your body. They fight infections primarily. That's the main thing they do. They are involved in inflammation and in healing and basically keeping your body in tip-top shape against foreign invaders like infections and cancers and the like. So if the cells themselves are not, if they're not formed correctly, they're misshapen, they're not functioning correctly, that's there are myelodysplastic syndromes, or MDS. Some of them can turn into larger blood cancers. Some of them just kind of simmer along over time. So the treatments vary. I would suggest that your first call be to a hematologist and ask them about what type you have and what you ought to do, what kind of surveillance you'll need. It's generally you get some blood tests at periodic intervals. But what is that interval? 3 months, 6 months, 1 year? That would be up to your you and your doctor about what your specific type is. There are probably web resources you can do and look things up on that. I don't know any specific websites offhand, but anything related with an academic medical institution would be more reliable. What I mean by that is go to the University of Minnesota or go to Mayo Clinic site. They have good, I would say, reliable information about that. Just Googling myelodysplastic syndromes could lead you down a rabbit hole of inaccurate information. So go to some of those academic medical sites, and I think you could get some good information there. But my number one advice, call a hematologist.
All right, let's grab another text. This person is asking your recommendation for who should be tested for COVID-19. This person works at a place where no one wears masks, but the public is not let into the building. They say two staff people are 60 years of age, rest of the staff under 40. This person had a cough for 3 weeks, scratchy throat in May, some muscle soreness, but no temperature. And I guess the question is, what about testing with those folks?
Yeah, that texter who described those symptoms, I would be tested. It's relatively low risk if you're at a business where it's just you and the other coworkers, but it's not zero risk. I've been starting to put risk on sort of like a 1 to 10 scale just internally. This isn't scientific in any way, but, you know, if you were all by yourself and you never saw another living human being, your risk is like a 1. And if you're at an indoor large event in arenas of the like, you would be at a risk of a 10. That would be about as high as you could get. And being at a business where it's just you and a couple other coworkers is on the lower end of that scale, but it's not zero. And if the customers aren't allowed into the store at all, that's good as well. All that being said, if you have a scratchy throat for a couple, 3 weeks, and that's a symptom, and sore throat is one of the symptoms of COVID, and it's such a variable presentation. Some people have mild sore throat, and some people have a raging temperature and a bad sore throat and a cough. It could be anywhere in there. But this texter, I would recommend you be tested. I think that your symptoms are adequate. We basically tell people if you have any symptoms, you should be tested. If you've been around people that are positive, you should be tested. If you're a healthcare worker, you should probably be tested. And if you've been in large congregate settings, such as large gatherings of people, you should be tested. So this person qualifies, and I'd recommend they go in.
All right, we have a little over a minute to go, but here's maybe a quick question and a quick answer. Would a slight swelling at the top joint of the littlest fingers, along with occasional pain at that joint, be arthritis? And should it be monitored at home or treated? That case.
If the swelling is brand new, just happened yesterday or this week, and it's hot and red, you should go in quickly because it could be an infected joint. If it's sort of been happening over weeks to months, yes, it could either be arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, or osteoarthritis, which are different, but they're both types of arthritis. Then yes, that can you should be seen, but it could be not urgently. But if you have a red, hot, quickly swollen joint, that could be infected and you should go in. It could be infected or it could be gout. Those are the two things. But if it's more of a slow growing kind of a thing, just kind of not bothering you over the last few weeks or months or years, yeah, that could be arthritis, and you should maybe have either your primary doctor or a rheumatologist see you for that.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, and I think for those that maybe didn't get their questions answered, and we always run out of time, are we going to do another open line show next week?
Indeed we are, Denny. It's going to be July 5th. Everybody's going to be well-rested because you're going to have had a nice daytime activities, and we'll get up bright early on Sunday morning and talk about whatever's on people's mind. I look forward to doing that next Sunday.
Very good. Thanks very much. Have a good week and stay cool. Thank you, Dr. Hilden. And, yeah, join us again next week. We're going to do, as I said, another open line show. So if you missed getting your questions answered today, call us or text us next week. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.